Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, AWM Program Director Allison Sansoni talks with Shay Bravo, a Mexican-born author who has now lived half her life in the U.S. Shay began sharing her work online through Wattpad when she was 15 years old and has connected with over 100,000 followers. Historically Inaccurate won the 2019 Wattie Awards and is her first novel. Publishers Weekly called the book an earnest and timely read with convincing stakes. This program is presented in conjunction with our exhibit My America, which you can explore in person at the American Writers Museum or online at my-america.org. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest of our virtual events at the American Writers Museum. My name is Allison Sansoni, and I'm the program director here at the museum. Today's program is the latest in the Jean and John Rowe program series, My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today. It is presented in conjunction with the exhibit of the same name, which can be viewed at our museum on Michigan Avenue in Chicago or online at my-america.org. The exhibit and series honors the contributions to American writing from those Americans who came here or whose parents came here from worlds away. This program is supported in part by the Ephraimson Family Fund for Youth Education, and we welcome the students from Oswego High School who have joined us. We're talking today to Shay Bravo, who started writing when she was just 15. On the online platform Wattpad, she amassed more than 100,000 followers, hanging on every new chapter of her first novel, Historically Inaccurate. The book follows a young woman grappling with her mother's deportation and challenges on her college campus that include everything from balancing work and school and falling in love to stealing a fork. Shay was born in Mexico and has now lived more than half her life here in the U.S. Historically Inaccurate won the 2019 Wattie Awards and was published by Wattpad Books. Welcome, Shay.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here with us. Tell us a little bit about your path to publishing. I think, you know, some people may be aware of Wattpad as a fan fiction site, but you published original work there. How did you come to be writing there?
Yeah. So when I was younger, I used to write my stories in the notebook, and sometimes I would pass it around for my friends to read. I had a couple of reader friends, and I remember between sophomore and junior year of high school, someone mentioned to me, hey, you have pretty good writing. Why do you put it online? And I didn't know about Wattpad then, so I asked him, I was like, well, where would I put it? Because I had heard of sites like fanfiction.net and the like, but I had never, like, put original fiction online. And she's like, oh, there's this side Wattpad. You can write whatever you want in there. I was like, okay. So that's how it started. And I worked on different profiles on and off until I fell into the Purple Rose, which is my site name on Wattpad. And I had a story there that kind of blew up. It reached around 32 million reads on its peak. It took it down, and I started writing Historically Inaccurate in 2017, and then I dropped off the web for like 2 years, and then 2019 I continued and finished it. And while I was writing in 2019, Wattpad has the Wattie Awards, and they happen every year, but I never thought my writing was good enough for them. And in 2019, they added what they call the banner, where if your story is qualifying for the Wattie Awards, at the top of your story, when you put chapters in, it'll tell you, hey, your story qualifies for the Wattie Awards. Would you like to join? And that's the first time they implemented that. So I thought, why not? Like, what can I lose just not winning? So I did, and I filled out the log line and the summary, and just let it simmer there and submitted it. And then a couple of months later, Wattpad reached out to me and they asked me if I wanted to get on a call with them. What was interesting is that for the first time, the Wattie's main prize was going to be a publishing deal. And I never kept that in mind. I just thought, hey, if they're able to promote my book, that'd be awesome. And since I had a book that did very well, I'm sorry if you hear sirens.
Something.
There we go. since I had a book that did very well, I thought for a moment that they might be talking to me about the paid story programs, which they had recently implemented as well, which is a pay by chapter kind of story, except that sometimes you can pay for the whole book, which is good for writers and weapons, since there's a way that they can monetize their stories. So I thought, oh, maybe they're talking to me about that. But no, they're like, oh, would you like to send, could you send us the rest of your manuscript? And I didn't have the story finished then. So they gave me 3 days. And in those 3 days, I managed to finish the whole story. I wrote like 40,000 words at the very end in those 3 days. And I sent it to them. And then about a week later, they called me and they're like, oh, by the way, you won the Waddies. Would you like to be published?
And you said, no, no, I would
not. No, of course not. this is totally not what happened. So yeah, it was a crazy road to publishing. I know that Wattpad has the whole like, oh, it's a fan fiction or like teenage writing side. But I think it's giving writers amazing opportunities that are not really offered in a lot of websites. I know now it's getting more popular, the whole like write your book online and get published. But I think there were pioneers in the way of it.
Yeah. Tell me about your decision to write Sol Gutierrez, your main character. Who is she and what did you want from her in this book?
Yeah. So Soledad Gutierrez was kind of, she has this very dry and people call it morbid sense of humor. And at the time when I started writing Historically Inaccurate, I was going kind of through, and while I was writing the beginning of Historically Inaccurate, I was going through kind of like a dark phase in my life. And I wanted to write something that would not only entertain me, but also make me laugh. So a lot of her humor is things that make me laugh. Like there's a line where it says, the only thing that keeps me going is something like food sarcasm and knowing that one day everything will cease to exist, because I felt pretty much the same. But I also, as I continue writing, and it's not in the first edition, it's not revealed that her mom was deported at all until about the third chapter. And that was because I was writing her character, I realized, oh, like something happened. And there's a reason why she kind of deals with her anxieties and emotions this way. Also, some people mentioned that how her nickname means the sun and her name means loneliness. And that one wasn't, I didn't really think of that before I started writing her. I just knew from the very beginning that her name was going to be Soledad. I wrote the first, the description for my Wattpad book, because that's what I usually write first. And it used to say Soledad or sold to her friends, because that's less depressing. And that's how I started. I was like, oh, I know exactly who this character is and what's happening.
Yeah. Did she, you know, a lot of writers will mention that, you know, as they were writing their books, their characters would surprise them. You know, they would do things that they hadn't initially planned. Did you kind of have this whole thing, her whole story mapped out, or did she take a couple turns on you?
When I started writing it, it was kind of like, sit down, no plot, just go for it. So the whole first chapter, which is the whole break-in, and I use air quotes because she had a key for the house, the whole break-in scene was in one sitting. And the whole thing she says and the action she takes, instead of running out through the door she came in, she goes up the flights of stairs, like, why are you doing that? But it just flowed as I was writing. I was like, okay, she's kind of weird, but it's okay. And sometimes in certain scenes, I would just let the characters take over and do whatever they wish. Another example for that was the archive or the museum scene. A lot of that was just written as I was sitting down. I had mapped out that I wanted them to do the whole ringing of the bell, but I didn't plan for what was going to happen.
Historically Inaccurate is about so many of the issues that young Latinx people face today. How did you grapple with current events while you were writing the book?
So the interesting part about writing it within 3 years, so from 2017, 2018, 2019, and even part of 2020, because that was when I was editing, it's like things just grew more and more intense because that's when we started getting news of the camps and like immigration issues and the family separation. And family separation is something that's very important to the story and something that's very important to me. So it was hard writing certain scenes, writing the deportation scene, or even scenes just her talking with her mom were very hard for me to write. Even when you don't go through deportation, sometimes just talking to your grandparents. My grandparents are no longer with me, but they always lived in Mexico. So a lot of the times I had to call them. And Soledad mentions that she seldom talks to her grandma or like her extended family. So she's not only separated from her mother because she was deported, but she's also separated from her extended family. And that's what not only Mexican immigrants, but a lot of immigrants in general deal with, just the separation from a culture that is very family-centric.
Yeah. One of the really resonant parts of the book is when she's talking about, you know, facing, I think, what a lot of people with a certain amount of privilege would say are fairly minor consequences for, you know, some kind of innocuous missteps or mistakes, but they have this additional, you know, pressure for her because, you know, she's worried about like the smallest mistake could prevent her from ever seeing her mother again.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. Some people of color have way harder things in life than people with privilege. Like, for example, I'm very fair skin. I have a privilege over even Mexicans who have darker skin tones. And that's something that I accept. And Soledad, she is, her father was very fair skin and her mother was very dark tone skin, brown Mexican. And she talks sometimes how her father worked under the sun so much that he almost matches her skin tone. And she says that partially as a joke, but sometimes, for example, we have a microaggression when her and Diane are in a restaurant and a woman casually says, "Oh, y'all Mexicans look alike or sound the same," something like that. And Diane, who is a person of color, she's Black, she mentions, "Oh, that's racist." And Soledad just kind of brushes it off. She's like, "Oh, it's fine. We're in a Mexican restaurant. It's probably my fault." And Diane points it out to her. It's like, that doesn't make it okay. Which I wanted for people to like read this part and know that you should be able to. Sorry about that. They're testing the firearms on my place. I am so sorry.
We know you're safe. We know that smoke detectors work.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted people to understand. I had this small incident when my older sister was moving to Iowa, and I ended up moving to Iowa. And we went to the Sam's Club or something like that, and we got food at the food court. And my parents don't know English, so they were talking in Spanish with us. And me and my little sister were very fair, but my parents and my older sister are more... they call themselves caramel, but they're darker than us, and it's okay. And we were all talking in Spanish, and this other couple were sitting next to us, and they were giving us the meanest stare ever, and like mumbling to themselves. And me and my little sister just turned to them like, "What's your problem?" And they just mumbled like, "Oh, these Mexicans and stuff." And it's just things that happen, and I wrote that scene down, and I was like, I should probably remove this. Like, this wouldn't happen, but it also happened to me, so I thought I would include it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just one type of privilege, it's degrees of it. And I thought that came across really, really well in the book. As an immigrant writer, do you struggle with the pressure of representation, with the perception that everything you write will be judged as an example of something rather than on its own merits?
Sometimes, as I mentioned before, writing Soul and writing a diverse cast was something that came natural to me. It was more like the characters presented themselves. But I know some people might just look like, "Hey, read this book because it's diverse," or "Hey, read this book because it's about Mexican Americans," which is great. I think that's amazing to kind of like find representation in your book, but sometimes I also like for people to just like read the story and have a good time with it without worrying about certain aspects. there's a lot of, there's a scene where Soledad and Ethan talk just about their sexuality and what they think of labels and stuff like that. And I didn't include that to get some LGBTQ points. I wrote it because the characters seriously were thinking about it and like, how are they different in certain ways? And sometimes I just like, oh, that's just a scene that happened. That's not trying to like be a specific part of any stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Who were some of the writers that you read growing up? Did you see yourself in stories?
Not a lot. When I was growing up, I read good old teenage book like Twilight and Vampire Academy, like all the good paranormal stories. And a lot of the time they're written by white authors that have white main characters, white love interests. And again, it's fine. They're their own stories, I think, whether that creates drama along the way or not. I just read them because they were interesting to me. One of my favorite authors to this day is still Leigh Bardugo. And while her first story was more like the old YA paranormal stories, now The Six of Carl's Duology, for example, had a lot of diversity in it, which is what I really liked, and which is what kind of made me want to write a fantasy book with like a big cast of characters. So I didn't read a lot of books that represented me, but I did grow up in a very small part of Texas that they call it like a second Mexico, because the culture there is just very Mexican. We're an hour away from the border. We call it the Valley. And I never felt separated from my own culture, which Soledad mentions that she does.
Yeah. Were there other Mexican-American writers that you read?
Not until right now I've started to write more. I did read when I was in middle school Esperanza. I think is it Taking Flight? No, I might be wrong. But I read a couple of books that were assigned for class. But now, as I've grown as a writer and I'm trying to diversify my bookshelf, I am reading a couple. I'm Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter. I'm halfway through it, it's really good. And some Latinx writers, for example, I'm reading Clap When You're Land by Elizabeth Acevedo, or I might be saying her first name wrong. And With the Fire on High, and there's another book I was reading, but I completely forgot what it was called. But they're all very good. They're all in my shelf. I just need to get through them. And it's just, I want to read more by more authors, by more characters, by more own voices, writers. I think it's incredible that now publicists are looking for more actual voices to put forward.
I just want to remind folks while we're talking that if you have a question or something that you'd like to ask, you can type it into the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen, and we'll read those questions out in a few minutes. Because we've got so many kids watching, I wanted to ask what kind of formal writing training you have, and what kind do you think a writer really needs in order to be successful?
So I'm an English major. I graduated college back in 2017. However, I don't think you need to have any quote unquote formal writing. I had one of my favorite professors. I was in creative writing for children's lit, and they could show you all the way from kindergarten to even new adult. So it was all the spectrum up to the adult. And I was writing my fantasy story for her class. And I went to her office hours one time, which is good to visit your professor's office hours, just saying for the kids out there. And I was talking with her, I was just having a conversation, and I was telling her that I thought to be a better writer, I should get a master's in creative writing, and maybe that'll help me. This was way before I started writing historically inaccurate. Maybe that would help me get published one day. And she told me straight on, she's like, oh, you don't need a master's degree. You're a good enough writer to get published. And I thought that helped me out a lot, not only with my confidence, but thinking to myself, okay, maybe I can do this. Maybe I don't have to like spend my years just trying to be good enough to write a book. And that's why I want to write that high fantasy book now, because for the longest time, even up until this year, I haven't written it because I think to myself, oh, my writing's not good enough to write that yet. And I think now I just need to sit down and do it.
Yeah. A lot of the writers that we talk to talk about, you know, every book teaching you how to write the next one.
Yes.
And so kind of what did you learn from writing this particular book? What did you learn about writing?
I think I learned about more realistic dialogue a lot because the club members and Sol and her friendships flowed very easy to me. And I've had a couple of people point out, I was like, oh, this book was oddly realistic, as in I thought the History Club was going to be like this whole shady organization and stuff. He's like, but the struggles Sol had were very real. And the conversations she had with her friends, they pointed out to me that her friendship with Carlos felt like a real friendship, and how you would talk to your friends. And that has inspired me to go back and rewrite one of the most popular book I had, because a lot of the dialogue felt forced in their old versions. And now I'm about 30,000 words in, and I was like, I like this better. It feels more grounded. And I think that's what Historically Inaccurate helped me out a lot, to ground my stories in some sort of reality. Yes, they do have like random plot twists, like, oh, that wouldn't really happen in real life. But then again, you wouldn't have a history club that makes you break the law in real life. That I know of.
That we know of yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. What is the role kind of the community of readers that you build on sites like Wattpad and some of the other, you know, communal writing sites? What did that do for your work?
I think there's some pros and cons to community of readers, because you always have conversations about your story going on. And I know it really depends on how many readers or how popular your story is. But it could also get to the point, for example, where big YouTubers start making repetitive content for big views. That's kind of what happened to my first novel there. It got so big, so fast, that I would just read what the comments wanted. I was like, okay, I can do that in the chapter. And like, I would make the chapter based on that. And the story started to become separated from what I wanted. And I remember I got up to like chapter 40 something, and I couldn't do it anymore. So I told them, hey, I'm going to delete this book, and they were not happy. So that's clearly one of the cons. However, one of the pros is when you are writing a story that you love and you don't let yourself get carried away, you get a lot of people who will message you thoughtful messages. And it's just a paragraph or 2 minutes like, hey, this story wasn't what I expected. That's what I've gotten for Historically Inaccurate. I've gotten quite a couple of comments like, hey, the relationship was very normal and healthy. And I didn't expect that, because you have a lot of the tropes as like bad boy and stuff like that. And I was just pleasantly surprised. And like, they just give you like questions and thought out comments, and it pushes you to go forward. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, you know, you do when you get stuck in a story? That's a question that comes up a lot when we do student events. Everybody gets that. So what do you do when you get to a point and you're just like, I have no idea what happens next or how to do it?
Yeah. So that actually happened in Historically Inaccurate, which is why I stopped writing it for about a year and a half. I stopped writing right after a scene with Soledad and Carlos go to an IHOP to talk about her feelings, which is what they do a lot throughout the book. And I didn't know where to take the story from there. And back then I just let my blog take over me and didn't write for a year and a half. And then I came back and kept on writing. But that's not what I would tell other people to do, because you really shouldn't stop writing for a year and a half. Recently, I also live right next to a plane base, military base, so every now and then that happens.
Sound effects. It works.
So I recently saw a class with Neil Gaiman, fantastic writer, and he mentions what to do with writer's block, which is what I implemented to go back to rewriting my old story, which was when something doesn't work, delete it until it did work. And it's it's very painful to do that because some tests is just, oh, three paragraphs and then I can take a different, and some tests it's like two chapters. So it's hard, but once you find the path where you went wrong, it's easier to branch out from there. Another thing that you can also do is have a gibberish notebook, which is what I call it, which is where you go and start writing, not scenes or no specific book, just start writing whatever comes to your mind and see if you can either integrate that into your book or see if you can make another story about this. You don't have to, some books are not meant to be finished and or written to begin with. Maybe you have ideas for stories, and that's not necessarily a story, but something that you can put two and two together and make a third novel.
That's great advice. That's great. I love the idea of a gibberish notebook.
I think everyone
should have one of those.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you also know that at some point, you know, that all of that is grist for future work.
Yeah, exactly. I think Neil Gaiman called it like, like a compost pile where you go put your ideas and then from there you can get something new.
That's great. That's great. So what are you working on now?
So I am rewriting an old novel. I am currently writing a different novel on Wattpad called In the Midwest of Nowhere, partially inspired by a road trip and for me living in the Midwest. And it's also an LGBTQ story. It's about a bisexual woman and this other girl, and it's super cute. I call it my wholesome story because I just wanted to be happy. But of course, there's sadder parts and stuff that they talk about. And then I am also writing my fantasy novel, which hopefully one day will be three books, but right now I just need to get through the first one.
So was there, before we get to the audience questions, and I just want to remind folks if they can type them into the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen and we can read those out. But before we get to that, I was wondering if you wanted to read a little bit to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I can read a little scene, and it starts with the flyer for the history club, which is how they, as Soledad puts it, entices new people into a cult. And it's a couple of pages long, but it shouldn't take that long to read. A history club, afraid of never being satisfied, hungry to spend time with dead people at the local museum, trying to find a way to kill time because you're a lonely history nerd. Fear no more. We got the right answer for you. Meet us each Saturday at 10 a.m. at L8135. The password is cornbread. Don't question it. Seems legit. There's a bit of guilt in my gut at the thought of luring unsuspecting students into a society that asks them to do daring tasks in order to join. Nevertheless, I place papers inside my folder and then fumble in my seat to get my backpack. As I do so, Anna finishes up her conversation with Ophelia, and I stand to ask her about Ethan's little problem. Is there a possibility of getting the Winston's house key back? I say. Anna reaches into the back of her head to undo a clip on her wig. Forgot something in there? Interested in elderly voyeurism? What? No. I'm kidding. Not everybody shares Carlos' taste. I heard that, Carlos shouts. Anyway, why? She pulls off her wig to reveal a cap covering her bright blue hair. Their grandson. You remember I told you about him. I happen to have a terrible memory. It could be sarcasm, but I still don't know her well enough to know for sure. When I first met Anna a couple of weeks ago, she seemed a bit cold. Carlos assured me it was because that's the way she is, holding herself high as the face and the leader of the club. Older members seem to really like her, though, so maybe I just haven't gotten to that point yet. He threatened to call the police. Ah, right, him. He asked me to get the key to his house back. Have you told him to change the locks? Her hair comes undone, blue strands falling above her shoulders. In a way, I like how it clashes with the colors of her outfit. I hadn't thought about that. She taps the side of her head, gathering the documents from the desk. Look, it is possible to give him the key back, but it'd be breaking club policy. The system we run is information sensitive, and we wouldn't like the word getting around to the wrong people about what we do. A smile creeps up her lips. Although, what do I have a bad feeling about this? If you recruit him into the club, this will all be fixed. Words are flying out of my mouth before I can thoroughly think about her statement. That's a terrible idea. Inviting him to join the club would not only put me in an awkward position, but we could also represent a threat to the whole club. Not only would we get to see what we do inside the club, but if he wanted to, he could bring the entire Westbury Police Department. Just because he didn't call the cops on me doesn't mean he won't be tempted to do it in the future. In the history of bad ideas that are very unlikely to actually work, this is up there with the Trojan horse. If he wanted to, he would have already, don't you think? Who knows? Maybe he's more interested in us than we are in him. Besides, we need all the members we can gather. She pulls out a weathered envelope made of thick cotton-like paper and that has a golden wax seal with the History Club's logo on it. It's a direct invitation that is only given to top priority candidates. I've only seen a letter like that once when Carlos presented me with one. During my first semester at Fair Lost, yes, I had Carlos and Diane and I had my job, but it felt like I was spinning my wheels. Without mom around, I lost a pillar of my core family. It's strange not having her here. And now that a new chapter of my life has begun, not having her here was startling, even physically painful at times. For someone who had never really met her extended family, losing my mother was like losing a part of myself. I couldn't leave that alone, not in that situation, and not considering the amount of debt we were quickly getting to look at for legal fees in the future. So WCC was the only option aside from online classes. My future went from being an excitement adventure to look forward to me wandering aimlessly through the haze. Carlos had made many attempts to get me to socialize more, but after a summer, all I wanted to do was focus on school and not get into the type of trouble that would worry my parents even more. So over winter break, he showed up with an envelope promising to place a place to hang out that wasn't home or work, somewhere where I could relax and see people, a club that I was already overqualified by being a history major.
Thank you. That was wonderful. We'll start a few audience questions here. Just type them into the Q&A box if you think of something as we're watching. I have a question. Is the novel written in both English and Spanish or Spanish phrases? And if it's primarily in English, why did you choose this main language to write in?
So I've been writing in English since I was 15 when I started Wattpad. And actually, I think I like my writing more now that I'm including small bits of Spanish. Before the book was edited, there were a lot more sections in Spanish, but I did get a couple of people saying they didn't feel included by having so much Spanish and not as much English or not having direct translations. But I didn't want a lot of direct translations because it felt ungenuine to the characters. So because of that, I decided to keep a few phrases and just from context clues talking about it. So there's still Spanish. I chose English because that's the main language that I write on, but I am tempted to translating historically inaccurate, and we'll see how that goes with Wattpad books.
Are there concepts that you, just to kind of follow up on that, are there concepts that you find it easier to express in Spanish than in English?
Whenever she talks with her dad, it's hinted at that a lot of what her dad's saying, even when it's English, it's bad English. And that's coming from my parents who only speak Spanish, as I mentioned before. And I think a lot of the things that her family and her talk about feel easier for me to type in Spanish.
We have a question here from Sue. What do you think attracted people to Historically Inaccurate, and what made it stand out on Wattpad?
So I'm always awkward when it comes to like the whole, oh, you won the contest, awesome. I was like, not sure why, but I'm happy that it did. But I think what some people have told me that attracted them to it was the ease of the story. How she talks with the characters. I know Wattpad loves a good drama, and that's what keeps some people going. But I think a lot of what happened was they liked the family dynamics. I know a lot of teen books, and I'm not saying mine are not like this, but characters have problems with their parents and like fighting or like, oh, I don't need you kind of thing. I was even talking with a writer friend of mine, and I was talking to her story. She's like, notice that she doesn't have a good relationship with her mom. She just doesn't. And I think it's just important that some family dynamics, even if they're separated, they're still family, and sometimes they work out. There's a conversation Soledad has with her mom, and she mentions that Ethan has lived with his grandparents for a long time, and her mom says, Family doesn't always mean mom, dad, and children. It can be grandparents and children, a single parent, children, or no kids, and that's okay.
Yeah. It was one of the more moving parts of the book is when she's having these regular conversations with her mother, because, you know, they're doing them over the phone, and you can really feel how that wears on her and on her mother, and how that strains that relationship. So we have a question from Chris. How do you tackle writer's block, or is there a certain way you avoid it?
So I think it's unavoidable as a writer. I'm also an artist, and I also deal with art block. And I'm actually have been in a quote unquote art block since college because I was an art minor. However, as I mentioned before, have a notebook where you can write gibberish in, and if necessary, delete part of your story. And those are the two things that have helped me out a lot.
Yeah. Have a question. Guilty pleasure fan fiction favorites.
I love the whole enemies to lover thing. It's one of my favorite tropes. I think it's one of many readers' favorite tropes. I also like enemies to friends to lovers. And I don't know, as long as fan fiction is good and gritty and has a lot of angst, I'm okay with it.
Are there particular fandoms that you read in?
Not too many, I think. I'm terrible, but I never read the Harry Potter books growing up or the Percy Jackson books. So I think I missed a lot of the whole fandom side of things. I do like the whole Grisha verse by Leigh Bardugo. I think if there was a fandom, that's the one that I would be in.
This is another audience question. How many of the experiences of Saul can you relate to?
It's harder for me to talk about my journey since I'm a very private person, but there's a couple, especially her fear of someone close to her being deported and her anxiety culminating into actually happen. It's something that I've gone to and something that I've seen some families gone to. Her being separated from her main family as well, especially, again, when I started writing this, I had just moved to Iowa, so I was separated not only from my family, but also my extended family. And again, culturally, Mexicans and a lot of Latinx people, it's a very close-knitted community, family-wise, so it was very tough on me and clearly on the characters.
What advice would you give to, you know, to someone who was young and who was grappling with these kinds of issues? What would you tell them about how you dealt with them?
I would say, as Soledad does, be able to have conversations with the people that you love, even if they're far away, be able to call them, text them, do things. Also, for example, find someone to talk to. It doesn't even have to be your parents or siblings, but as long as you have someone that's close and loves you and you can talk with them, it's very important. I think one of the main things that I was grappling in with that time is that I didn't have a person that I could talk freely to. And it was very rough on me, which is why I wrote the History Club towards the end of the book. They become very family-like to Sol. And I think that's what keeps her in it. And even if that example is not great for the book because of all the things that happen in it, I think it's good to have either a group of friends or what they call a found family. I think that's very important for some people to get through rough times.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being here with us today and for talking with us. We're excited for the next book and to see where your writing career goes from there.
For having you. This was wonderful. I love talking to you guys.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you to all of the school students and members of the public that joined us today. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Next week, we will continue our celebration of Hispanic American Heritage Month with award-winning author Lilian Rivera. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.